Much and good morning to each one of you this morning. How many of you went for a walk today already? Put your hands up high. What did we talk about yesterday? Did anybody remember what we talked about? What was exercise, wasn't it? What was the bottom line? When we talk about exercise, there's something that we're really striving for. That the message behind it is what? What is the message? Circulation. There you go. Number one thing is circulation. The foundation, first foundation principle of restoring your health is getting the circulation back going again. Just to add to that, I don't have the overhead this morning. We haven't been able to get it to work yet, so I'm going to have to do a little hand waving and try and draw the pictures in your mind that are supposed to be there. But anyway, you know, if we take the circulation, when the blood leaves the heart, it goes through the arteries and then it goes to the we got it. Good. Wow. Thank you very much. It goes to the arteries and then it goes into the through the arterioles, through the capillaries, and then it goes across to the veins and back to the heart again. That's what we call circulation. When it goes through the capillary, some things begin to happen. And let's just talk about the blood itself. What's in the blood? What are the four main components in your blood? Help me out. What are the four main things in your blood? Okay, cells, good. And we said over here oxygen. Oxygen is carried by what kind of cells? What's the name? By the hemoglobin on what cell? On the red blood cells. And then we have red blood cells. What else do we have? White blood cells. What else do we have? What's the liquid portion of the blood called? Plasma, right? Plasma. And then we have platelets. Those are the four things that are in your blood. When the red blood cell, if we were to take a look at a red blood cell, we always think of them as something that's round. But if you pick that red blood cell up and you turn it on its side, you would see that it looks like a frisbee. And those red blood cells cannot actually get into a capillary. They're a little larger than the capillary itself, and the only way that the red blood cell can get into the capillary is it actually folds. It actually bends so that it's pushed into the capillary. On the surface of the red blood cell, you have electrical charges, and the red blood cells actually repel each other. We know that intuitively because if we get a cut, it seems like the blood goes everywhere, you know, just kind of because the blood is actually pushing away. Their cells are pushing away from each other, so it just goes like that. All right, so the red blood cells actually have to fold to be pushed into the, and they go pressed right against the capillary walls, which is fortunate because on the surface of the red blood cells is where they carry the oxygen. On the hemoglobin, the oxygen diffuses through the capillary wall right to the cells. Now, the white blood cells are different. The white blood cells can change their shape, and there are pores in the capillaries, and the white blood cells can actually swim through those pores out in between the cells in what's called the interstitial spaces, and they can hunt down bad guys out in between the cells. You know, how do the white blood cells hunt down the bad guys? You have any idea? How do they kill the bad guys? One of the ways they kill them is by surrounding them. They call it phagocytize. They actually surround them. They bring the bad guys inside, and inside the white blood cells, they have lysosome. I call it Lysol. You know, it's lysosome. That's how they kill them. But in the process of killing the white blood cells, I mean the bad guys, some of the white blood cells themselves die. The liquid portion of the blood, which we call plasma, leaks out through the pores and bathes the cells. It's got the food in it, so the cells are literally swimming in their food, and they can take in the food they need. And the cells themselves throw off things they don't need. So if we looked at in between the cells, what would we see? We'd see some dead white blood cells. We'd see some plasma, which is now called interstitial fluid that's bathing the cells. We would see some things that the cells have thrown off. How does all this stuff get back to the heart? I got a whole bunch of stuff out here, right? I got dead white blood cells. I got liquid that's bathing the cells that is called interstitial fluid, which is outside the cells now that is in between the cells. I've got things that the cells have thrown off. This is all around the cells themselves. How does all this stuff get back to the heart? We've got a system. It starts out single cells at a time, and then they form channels, and then eventually they go to nodes, and then they go to the heart. What is that system called? Lymphatic system, exactly. Did you know you have a more lymphatic system than you have? You have more lymph vessels than you have blood vessels? There we go. There's the lymphatic system. You have more lymph vessels. You have more lymph in your body than you have blood. How does the lymph move in the lymphatic system? What pumps the lymph? What does? Oh, good. We got some good exercise. You know, I tell people when they come to the guest house, we do lectures every evening. And I tell them if they will answer the word exercise for every question I ask, they get 50% on the exam right away. 50%. If you answer exercise, it doesn't matter what I ask. As long as you say exercise, you're going to get 50%. In this case, it's right. If we, Dr. Shyrock says, how does the lymph move in the lymph vessels? He says the lymph moves in the lymph vessels very much as the blood moves in the veins. You remember we talked last night about how the blood moved in the veins? This is a lymph vessel that's blown up large, and you'll see in that lymph vessels the one-way valves that I talked to you about that we have in the veins. You see those bicuspid valves? That's exactly what's in the lymph vessels, and what happens is when your muscles contract, they put pressure on the lymph vessels, moving the lymph into the next chamber, and it keeps on. Now, isn't it fantastic that if you took 100 bacteria and injected them into a lymphatic vessel before a lymph node, then you measured the lymph coming out of the lymph node, you know what you'd find out? No bacteria. The lymph node itself is lined with plasma cells, and when the bacteria get into the lymphatic channel, and they get the bacteria, as soon as they get into the lymph node itself, it swells up and blocks it off so that the plasma cells, which are one of the types of white blood cells, they actually take care of it for you. So you can imagine, this is a filtration system which is carrying kind of the debris, what I call like the sewer system. It's carrying the debris back to the general circulation separately. So all this stuff that's going on goes back separately while you're carrying on with the oxygenation and everything else with the general circulation, the lymphatic system. And what makes it work?
Exercise.
Good. There we go. Exercise. Answer the question. You got it. Exercise is what makes it work. All right? So it's actually, now, at our guest house, we have 14 bathrooms. We have, in the basement, we had two big tubs that we had built. And in the bottom of the tubs, we had a P-trap. Everything was plumbed in nicely. The tubs worked fantastically. But at the bottom of one of the tubs, we hadn't put a strainer. And one day, a lady was in the tub or whatever and knocked a towel or a T-shirt off the side of the tub into the tub while it was draining. And the towel went down through the drain, went along underneath through the pipe, and came to a footing underneath the building and stopped. And it plugged the pipe. So then when the wash machines upstairs would unload, you know, the water comes roaring out of the wash machines, it would come roaring down the pipe, and it would get stopped there, and then it would back up the pipe, and if you were sitting in the tub downstairs, the bathtub, the stopper would pop up, and here comes all the lint and all the water and everything, and the person's in the tub. What? You know, if you're in a tub taking a bath, you're relaxing, you're enjoying yourself, all of a sudden the stopper pops up, and all this lint and soapy water and everything starts coming into the tub, you jump, you're pretty excited. Now, if I came to you and I told you, you know, we've got 14 bathrooms in here, but I'm very sorry, they're not working. They're broke down. How long would you stay? Oh, the food is fabulous. Oh, we love the food. We love the massages. We love the nature trails. We love what we're doing. But I got to go, right? I need a bathroom. Now, your body, the lymphatic system, is like the sewer system. It's like this system that's carrying the debris, right? What is it that makes it work? Some people think that exercise is an option. You know, I'm awful busy. I got so much to do this week. I'll do it next week. I plan to do it. I'm going to do it one of these days. I'm going to start exercising. The more you study the body, the more that you're going to understand that we were literally designed. Our body was literally designed to exercise. Did you know that as human beings, we can outwalk every creature in creation? Did you know that? If you took a creature, one of the Bushmen's ways of hunting down the antelope in the desert is they just walk them down. They just start in the middle, beginning of the morning, they get on his trail, and they just keep on walking. He keeps on running away, They just keep walking and walking and walking. Eventually, he just collapses. He can't outrun them. He can't outwalk them. We can outwalk every creature in creation if we're fit. We're designed to exercise. We're actually made. How much of your body's water? How much of your body is water? How much? About 70% water. When you think of water in your body, what comes to mind? Give me some associations. When you think of water and your body, what are some of the things that come to your mind? Anything at all? Help me out. What was that? Cleansing. Good. Anything else? Nobody else thought, when you think of your body in water, you need to get enough. Tears. Oh, tears. There we go. Tears. Good. Anybody else? Sweat. Sweating. Good. Urine, right? What about saliva? How much saliva do you produce every day? You got any idea? You produce about a quart of saliva every day. Well, it depends on who's cooking. Right? Sometimes the food can dry your saliva, right? But about a quart of saliva every day, a gallon and a half of digestive fluid. We are not only 70% water, but we are producing water, tears, saliva, sweat, right? We are producing water all the time. We are kicking water out of our body all the time. When you think, what is the, now what I want us to think about this morning, though, is we have four ways to eliminate poison, four ways to get rid of impurities, four ways to detoxify. What are the four eliminatory organs we have in our body? What are they? Help me out. What are they? What are the four eliminatory organs? Kidneys. Good. We got one. Kidneys. Lungs. Well, liver is like the bowels. We're going to have to say the bowels. That's the exodus, the bowels. Okay, so we're going to say kidneys, bowels, skin, lungs. Right? That's the four. Is there anything else? These are the four ways. Kidney, skin, liver, and bowels. What does the body use at every one of those doorways as the vehicle to carry away the poison? What does it use? What does it use? Water. What about your lungs? How does the lungs carry out the carbon dioxide? How does it get rid of the carbon dioxide? Does it use water? Let's take a look. Here we go. If we take a look at the lung, one of the lung's vital functions is to transport carbon dioxide from the air sacs to the bronchial passages from which it is exhaled and oxygen from outside the body into the air sacs. This can be done only by dissolving these gases in a liquid medium. The solvent that does this is water. Every time you breathe out, if you take your glasses off and go, what do you got? You got condensation. Every time you breathe out, you got moisture. Every breath, if you're driving, oh, those of you who can remember, this is a long time ago. Do you remember when we used to have Volkswagen vans or Volkswagen cars that the heaters didn't work very well in? We all at some point had one, you know, and we had this scraper on the inside, you know, so we could drive to work. We used to use the scraper and scrape the breath off the window. We used to say to the person beside us, stop breathing, I can't see where I'm going, right? You remember that? Of course. Every time we breathe out moisture, every breath, right? If we took a person's skin and we skinned them, how much would we have? How many square feet of skin would we have? If we took somebody's skin and we skinned them, we'd have 19.6 square feet of skin in a very unhappy person. If we took that same skin and looked at it under a microscope, what are we going to see? What's in the skin? Pores. Now the pores, there are literally millions and millions and millions and millions of pores in your skin. And if you took the skin and measured the pore, included the pore in the skin measurement, so you went along the skin, went down the pore, back up, down the skin, up, went the whole skin like that, guess what? Your skin would go from 19.6 square feet to something we can't even believe. It says here 11,000 square feet. Now our guest house, we have 12 guest bedrooms, we have a common meeting room, we have a living room, a dining room, we have a kitchen, we have 9,000 square feet. If we took your skin and laid it out flat, you would be 11,000 square feet. Isn't that amazing? When somebody says the skin is the largest organ of the body, this is what it is. It's the largest organ of the body. And we have at the guest house, we have a hot tub, a steam room, an infrared sauna. If we put you in there for 20 minutes, what are you going to do? What's going to happen? You're going to start doing what? Perspiring. Where is that sweat coming from? Where's it coming from? It's coming out of the pores. Where are the pores getting the water? Do you have a tank of water in your body? Can you dial up and say, hey, send me some water? Do you have a tank of water anywhere? Do you have a spot where you just store water and you can dial up and get the water? Do you have a spot like that? You don't, do you? You don't. We have water in between the cells. We have water in the cells. We have water all over the body, but we don't have water in a tank. We have what we call a water allocation system. We have a way of allocating water for certain needs in the body, and the water allocation system will allocate water for saliva, it'll allocate water for sweat, it'll allocate water for digestive fluid. If you woke up this morning and you had to make a choice between allocating water between sweat or saliva, what would your choice be? How many would choose to sweat first? How many would choose saliva first? Come on, be brave. Oh, there we got some brave ones. I'd rather eat than sweat, right? Any day. The only trouble is if you don't sweat, even a little bit of insensible perspiration, your body temperature starts to creep up, and when it gets to 102, do you feel like eating? You don't feel like eating. You feel like just laying in bed. You feel achy and sick, and you 102, you don't feel good. Aren't you glad that you don't have to sit there in the morning and decide what you're going to use water for? I'm going to use water for sweat. I'm going to use some for saliva. Aren't you glad that's all kind of built in? Isn't that neat? I mean, we get to enjoy it, but it's all built there for us. The water allocation system, the number one allocator of water in the body is histamine. If a tissue gets low in water, it starts to get high in histamines. Now, if you get high histamines, what do we call that? What's one of the reactions the body has to high histamines? What do we call that? Allergies, right? Allergies. Are allergies on the uptick in our society? Are they? Now, I was giving this lecture at a high school in Vernon, close to where we have our guest house, the town, public high school. I had a whole classroom full of young people. The boys and girls in the class were around 15 years old. I had a 15-year-old boy sitting right on the front row here. And when I came to a certain point in the lecture, he spoke up without speaking to me or any one of his classmates. It was kind of like a revelation. He was sitting there and he was thinking, and all of a sudden he said, "I don't drink any water." He said, "I don't drink any water." His body is 70% water. He's producing saliva. He's producing urine. He's producing sweat. He's producing all of this stuff. And he said, "I don't drink any water." Now, do you think if we stop drinking water as a country, would we start getting higher histamine levels in our body? Wouldn't we start getting higher histamine levels and we start having more and more allergy problems? The number one, if histamine is the number one allocator of water in the body, what would be the number one antihistamine? Drinking water, wouldn't it? This would be the number one to reduce the amount of histamines in the body, just to make sure we had drank enough water. All right. Now, you don't have a hot tub or a steam room or an infrared sauna at home. How could you sweat? How could you get a sweat going without, if you don't have a hot tub, you don't have a steam room, you don't have an infrared sauna, you don't have all these gadgets? Oh, there we go. Look at that, 50%, right on. We got some really good students here. That's one way. What else could you do? Anything else? Open your Visa bill? You ever notice they're never lower than what you expected? You never get a restocking fee where they actually add it on to you and say, "Here's $50 extra for the end of the month." Yeah, well, you know what you could do? Most of us have a bathtub in our house. We could pour water in the bathtub, right? Warm water, and sit in the tub and get a sweat going. Would that be valuable for us? Wouldn't it? You know, the skin is one of the largest eliminatory organs of the body. If you're writing down, I see some of you are writing some things down. Here's what I'd like you to write down. The book's name is Detoxify or Die. Detoxify or Die. Now, when I tell you to read this book, I'm going to tell you to read it or look at it carefully. The doctor who wrote it did a thorough job of telling you what's wrong with your environment. Every single thing that's in it. The paint that's in your walls, the stuff they put in your the dry cleaner fluid they put in your clothes when it's in the store, you know, all that stuff. I mean, everything you can imagine, every name of every chemical you've ever heard of in your life, she's got it in the first 100 pages. Enough to scare you to death. So you want to just stay in your house and be the bubble boy, you know, just put a bubble around you, just sit there and don't do anything because it's in everywhere. It's innocuous. The whole environment's full of poison. Interestingly enough, in New Jersey, they did a test on people where they had them breathe into a machine that tested their breath to tell what chemicals they were breathing out, not what they were breathing in. And you wouldn't believe the list of chemicals that these people were breathing out. The highly toxic chemicals that they were actually breathing out because they had taken so much in. They did the same test here in Canada. And they actually did it to the MPs in Canada. And guess what they discovered? They found out that the person who breathed the worst chemical breath, do you know who it was? It wasn't Harper. It was the Minister of Environment. Can you imagine? This was a joke in Ottawa. The Minister of Environment breathed the most toxic breath. But we are breathing all of these chemicals, is what this book tells you. But then the doctor tells you what to do about it. And she talks in there about using your skin to sweat out these poisons. She specifically tells you to use the infrared sauna. But you could use your bathtub. You could just get your tub going. You don't want to get so hot that you just get out of it and you're just like a noodle. But you can put warm water in your tub. It only has to be a couple of degrees above your body temperature. And just grab a book and lay there for half an hour, and you can sweat. Is it valuable to sweat? Is it important for us to detoxify? If we ate perfect food, absolutely perfect food on a tropical island where there was absolutely no pollution, we still have to detoxify. Our body, when it breaks down food, still produces things that we can't use that we have to get rid of. We have to eliminate. So we have to detoxify. And so it's to our advantage to get our skin working properly, to get it sweating, to get it working for us. And one of the ways, like I say, is just sitting in a tub and getting that skin working. If you went to a center like ours in Germany, the center in Germany will work on your kidney. Largely work on your kidney. They have all kinds of treatments in these Kurs or these spas in Germany to help you with your kidney. Why do you think they do that? The reason is because we have four eliminatory organs. A lot of people are not doing a lot of exercise. So their lungs are not breathing deeply. They're not getting a lot of poison out through their lungs. They're not sweating. In fact, a lot of people are using things to stop themselves from sweating. They're applying things to their skin so they don't sweat. They're afraid to sweat. They're constipated. So what does that leave you to get rid of poison? The kidney. So when they go to Germany to a spa, a lot of times what they're working on is your kidney because it's very overworked. It's the one eliminatory organ that we're trying to keep working. Are you with me? Well, it's to our advantage to get all of these to start. We're going to be talking to you tomorrow about deep breathing, explain to you how to do it, what's important and all. Get those lungs working. Get that skin working. Get your skin healthy. You can do what they call is a cold mitten friction. I can explain that to you, how to do a cold mitten friction. Get that skin healthy. Get it functioning. Get that skin sweating. We've had people that have come to the guest house. They've gone into the infrared sauna. The first thing they do, they light up like a light bulb. They turn bright red, don't sweat. Means their skin has just stopped. It's not working. You go in the next day, same thing. The next day, same thing. About the fourth day, they start to sweat a little bit. About the fifth day, they start really sweating. Before you know it, within 2 weeks, they're sweating. Really, they say, wow, my skin is really working. It's actually working. They've got one of their eliminatory organs really working for them. See how valuable that is? You can do that with your own tub at home. Okay. The next one we want to talk to you about is the bowel. If the bowel is not working right, what's the problem? What do we get? The bowel is not working right, what's the problem we get? What's it called? Well, if it's getting constipated, it's working fine. It's working well. That's not the problem. If you get diarrhea, that means the bowel is not working right. See, what the bowel's job, the primary function of the bowel is to reabsorb fluid. You produce a quart of saliva every day, a gallon and a half of digestive fluid. You certainly don't want all of that fluid going out through the bowel. You want to be able to retain a lot of that fluid. So if your bowel is not working right, you get diarrhea. And you don't have diarrhea for only 2 days, and you're phoning your doctor and saying, help, what's the problem here? I'm washing out. I'm going to be finished. I need help, right? I mean, you can't let this continue. You're going to get dehydrated. But our problem in our society is not so much diarrhea. Our problem is constipation. That's not the bowel's problem. The problem is what we're giving our bowel to work with. And so it says here, the first thing is to avoid constipation, eat food containing fiber. Why fiber? What is fiber doing? What's its job? What it does, fiber absorbs water. That's what it does. If you take bran, wheat bran, and put it in a glass with water and stir it up, it will swell up 5 times its size. It's called pentose action. It swells right up. It bulks up. Now, that does 2 things for you. First of all, what it does is it helps your stomach emptying time. So as the food goes through your stomach, if you eat whole grain, grains with the bran included, what happens is it swells up and it slows the rate at which the starches leave your stomach. So it keeps your blood sugar from taking right off. If you eat a whole grain piece of bread or eat a white piece of bread, if you eat the white bread, it doesn't have the fiber, it doesn't swell up, it just dumps the carbohydrate right into your duodenum, and the next thing you know, your blood sugar is taking off and you've got a blood sugar problem. If you eat a whole grain slice of bread, the bran will swell up and it will slow the stomach emptying time, which keeps your blood sugar lower. When it gets to the bowel has no way to wring the water out of it. So the water just stays in the stool and it keeps it soft and easier to pass. So we have eating fiber. It says drink adequate water. The next one is practice regularity. You know, when we work with guests at the guest house, every session we have usually about 12 people, 12 new people. And, you know, they tell us a story. The number one problem they have when we talk about exercise is they don't have time. They don't have time to exercise. Did you know that the people are so pressed for time that they don't have time to eat? You can't believe this. You wouldn't, you know, people, they got to eat. But a lot of people that come to our guest house, their breakfast is when they drive through a Tim Hortons window. Now, I noticed that you have a distracted driving law here. We don't have that in BC. We have no cell phones, but you're still allowed to have your Tim Hortons cup of coffee and your muffin on the way to work. And a lot of the guests that come to our place, that's their breakfast. They go through the Tim Hortons window, they get a muffin and a cup of coffee. And it used to be they had a cell phone in one hand, a cup of coffee in the other hand, and the steering wheel in their elbows, and they were driving to work. And when they get to work, when it comes to be lunchtime, they ask everybody in the office, what are we getting today? Are we getting Chinese? Are we getting pizza? What are we getting? Let's order it in. And they order in something a la carte, whatever is coming. Supper. Well, you know, it used to be we sat down for supper, right? We used to sit down and have supper together, and everybody sat around the supper table. Oh, not anymore. We're too busy. This person's going out with the soccer practice, and so-and-so is going here, and so-and-so. I'll meet you next Thursday. We'll have supper together. We don't have time to eat. We're too busy. And people don't have time to sleep. If you go to church, you'll notice that, you know, people try to catch up. You know, the preacher's preaching. Everybody's having a sleep trying to catch up. Well, it's not just church. It's not just because the church is boring. Because if we're driving, you'll find that one person is sleeping, and then they change drivers, and the other person is sleeping. We're about, all of us running around about an hour sleep deprived, right? We're tired. We don't have time to eat. We don't have time to sleep. We don't have time to exercise. And if we're not eating fiber, we don't have time to go to the bathroom. We're constipated. So in the morning, we say, oh, I'll do it when I get home. Rush out the door. What is the bowel's job? What is it supposed to do all day long? Absorb moisture, you see. By the time I'm ready to head home, I'm ready to look for, oh, wow, I better stop at the health food store, the pharmacy or something, get some dynamite. I got a problem. I'm stuck. Something's wrong here. You see what I'm saying? As long as when nature calls, we've got to learn to heed nature's call. Because the bowel, what its job is to reabsorb water, moisture. The longer we wait, what's the job of the bowel? Just to reabsorb moisture. It's going to become harder to pass the longer we wait. So we need to learn to practice regularity. Learn to eat fiber, learn to practice regularity. And the last thing it says here, exercise regularly. And the reason for exercise regularly is because the bowel springboards off the abdominal muscles. If the abdominal muscles are strong and well developed, then we have a good evacuation. If we have weak, distended stomach, the muscles are weak, the bowel is distended, nothing has a good evacuation. Are you with me? So again, exercise comes into even our bowel habits. All right, the last one of our eliminatory organs we want to talk to you about is our kidneys. When I talk to children about kidneys, I do this. I want to just show you this just because it's a bit of fun. I give the children, grade one or two, a piece of paper like this. And I ask them to draw a picture of themselves. Now, if you, those of you who are parents or grandparents here, you can have some fun with this. Ask them to draw a picture themselves. And they always draw a picture of a little tiny thing over here on the piece of page, just like a little bug. Sometimes I'll ask them to draw a picture of themselves and a picture of their teacher or their parent. And you got to try this. They draw a picture of themselves that looks like a bug, and their parent or their teacher disappears. They're so big, I feel sorry for them. They don't even fit the page. They're huge. Wow, they're big. And I've looked at those pictures, and I thought about it. And I thought, you know something? Kids don't look up to us. They worship us. They really, they do more than just look up to us. They don't just think of it. Just think about when you were a little kid. I can remember when we were little kids, we used to row across this lake in Ontario. We went to a summer camp there. We used to row across this lake in Ontario. And we thought, oh, we were out on this huge ocean. We thought it was so huge. When we went back when we were growing up, you could throw a rock across that crazy lake. I mean, it was hardly, you know, it wasn't that big at all. But when their children are little, they really look up to us. Now, I asked them to put on there, I say, now draw me a picture of yourself and use the whole page. And what do you think I get then? I get a great big head and no body. Just a little stick body. Some of these kids are good artists, but they draw this great, why do they draw just a great big head? Anybody got any idea? That's all they are, just a great big head. And I thought about that. I looked at that, all these pictures of kids with just great big heads. And I thought when they went in the bathroom, when they're a kid, to brush their teeth or wash their face, they walk in the bathroom and they walk up to the sink. Here's the sink. What do they see? All they see is their head, right? Until they grow up, all they are, the head walks in, brushes its teeth, and walks back out. I mean, that's all they are, just a head, right? They don't have a body yet. They don't see a body. They have to get bigger to see a body. So then I asked them to put in there their kidneys. I say, now, I want you to put different organs. I want you to put your kidneys, because we're going to talk about your kidneys. I want you to put them on your picture. Where are your kidneys? You know what? I got one boy, put them right here. And I give him 100 marks because these are kidneys, right? Aren't kids literal? I mean, they're literal, right? I had one of them put them in his head. He drew his kidneys in his head. And I sat and looked at that. I thought, why would a kid draw his kidneys in his head? I mean, what was he thinking? Then I thought, you know what? His dad and his uncle were working in the shop together. And his uncle said to his dad, how did you figure that out? And his dad said, I used my kidneys. Right, guys? Okay, you got me, right? That's it. We got a couple nods. They know what I'm talking about. I tell people that because, you know what? We teach kids all kinds of things. More things we teach them is caught than taught. You know what I mean? We sit down, we're going to have a really good talk with them, but they copy us more than they listen to us, don't they? They want to copy us more than any other thing. If you start taking care of your health, no matter what age you are, you will influence everyone in your circle of friends. You will influence your children, you will influence your grandchildren, you will influence everyone. They will watch you. They will say, you know what? Grandma's taking care of herself. She's going for walks. Grandpa's taking care of himself. Wow. And they will start wanting to take care of themselves. That's the biggest lesson you can teach them, don't you think? The best thing is what you do, not what you say. Right? You're not going to tell them, go out and go for a walk. Go out and take them for a walk, or go out and set the example for them. Okay. So when we talk about the kidney, you know, the kidney is absolutely fabulous. The kidney has 1 million nephrons in each kidney. These are little filters. And if we took that little convoluted tubule, that little pipe, out of each one of those nephrons, we would have a pipeline that's 40 miles long, but we can't see it. 40 miles inside those little kidneys. They're just like little beans in your back. There's 40 miles of pipeline. And what the kidney is capable of doing is going through all the fluid in your body every half hour, molecule by molecule. So it's able to go through all of the fluid in your body every half hour, molecule by molecule. And the way it does it is simple. What that happens is you'll see the red part that goes up to what's called the capillary tuft. The liquid portion now is caught in the convoluted tubule. The liquid portion now is called glomerular filtrate. You make 180 quarts of that every day. The liquid portion is separated from the red blood cells, the white blood cells, the large proteins, and the platelets, and they go back and forth in that grid over top of the convoluted tubule, and they suck back the water they need through a simple process called osmosis. And so here goes the dry portion. It's going back and forth over the liquid portion, and it draws back the liquid it needs to operate the body on, and it does it through a simple process called osmosis. Now, here's what Dr. Shyrock says. Why would the body actually reabsorb any of the urea, which is actually a waste product? The way the tubule is built, it's supposed to keep the urea inside, and that's supposed to go down and store it in the bladder until it gets full and it's ready to pass out of the body. Why would the red blood cells, the white blood cells, suck back urea through the tubule? Tubule's not supposed to do that. Why would it do that? If I'm not drinking enough water to make the urine relatively dilute, a higher percentage of urea is reabsorbed. So the problem is I'm not drinking enough. I ask people, you know what, if you had six people over for a supper, could you wash all the dishes? If I gave you two glasses of water for six people, could you wash all the dishes with two glasses of water? Who thinks they could do it here? Nobody. Who thinks they can't do it? Can you do it or can't you do it? Come on, ladies, help me out. Could you? Couldn't do it. You could do it. It would take you hours. You'd have to take a cloth and first of all knock everything off with a little dip, and then take another corner of the cloth, dip it in, and then go over them again, then take another corner of the cloth, dip. And that's what we're doing. Some of us, we're trying to keep our whole body clean with two glasses of water a day. You know, that's what we're trying to keep the whole body clean with just two glasses of water a day. See what's going on? All right. How much water do we need? If we were to take the different needs of the body, the lungs need a cup. These are not Dixie cups. These are not 4-ounce glasses. These are 8-ounce glasses. The lungs need a cup. The skin needs 2 cups. The bowels need a cup. The kidneys need 6 cups. That means that we need 10 cups. We get 5 cups from our food. All of our food has water. If you take vegetation, plant foods, they're running around 80-90% water. If you take bread, it's running around 30% water. If you take all the water out of bread, we call it zwieback. But if ordinary bread is running around 30% water, dry lima beans are running around 10% water. Water in everything. So we get 5 glasses from our food. So we need to be drinking about 5 glasses of water a day. Well, we say about 6 to 8 at the guest house. What we like people to do is drink about 6 to 8 glasses of water a day. What's our favorite drink in Canada? Anybody know? Maybe not in this group, but what's the favorite drink in Canada? What is it? Well, coffee. Coffee, 80% of Canadians claim that they drink 3.5 cups of coffee a day. That's the average. 3.5 cups, 80% of adult Canadians. What's our second favorite drink? Soda pop. What's our third favorite drink? Alcohol. These are our 3 favorite drinks in Canada. If I give you the American, I don't have the Canadian grocery statistics, I'll give you the American. If I took you the grocery statistics for the top money makers in the grocery industry in the United States, the number one money maker in the grocery industry in America is Marlboro cigarettes. Number 2 is Classical Coke. Number 3 is Pepsi Cola. Number 4 is Kraft processed cheese. Number 5 is Diet Coke. Number 6 is Folgers coffee. Number 7 is Budweiser beer. There you go. These are the top money makers. Now why are they the top money? Why is it when I was a kid, and some of you must think that's ancient history, we got pop in an 8-ounce container. Then it went to a 10-ounce container. Then it went to a 12-ounce container. Then it went to a liter container. And now we've got the big gulp, which is 160 fluid ounces. We had a fellow that came to our guest house and told us he was drinking 2 big gulps a day. I was flying back from Minneapolis, and I was sitting there chatting to a doctor and his wife, and they said, "Can we send our daughter to your guest house?" And I said, "Sure." He says she drinks 12 cans of Mellow Yellow every day. 12 cans a day. We had a gentleman that came to our place, and he said to us, he had every ache and pain you can imagine. He said he was at doctors. He went to doctors. He was going to the doctors more than he was going home. He was actually at the doctors more than he was with his family. In fact, as he was having so many problems, his family had ostracized him from the table. He had to eat by himself so the family, the children, the mother and the wife could all eat by themselves. And he said he was drinking 6 Coke a day, and on the weekend, 2 cases. And he couldn't, the doctors couldn't put their finger on what was wrong with him. And finally, he started thinking, well, maybe I should stop drinking Coke. And he stopped drinking his Coca-Cola, and all of his aches and pains and all his health problems just disappeared. When he told us the story, he was just tears coming out of his eyes. He said, I can't believe it. It was as simple as that, just quit drinking Coke. Why did we go from 8 ounces to 10 ounces to 12 ounces to a liter to big gulps? What happened? Do you know when they were designing cars? There's a big debate in GM in Detroit, what they were going to do with the holders, what they put the pop in, because the larger size drinks wouldn't fit them anymore. They're actually considering taking out the passenger seat and just putting a big spot in there for, you know, with a straw in it, so you could just drink your pop while you're driving. What is the reason? Why is it that we keep drinking more and more of this stuff? Anybody know? It's actually a diuretic. The more you drink, the more water it takes to get rid of the sugar in the pop. Isn't that right? The more coffee you drink, the more water it takes to get rid of the caffeine in the coffee. The more alcohol you drink, the more water it takes to get rid of the alcohol in the water. These are all dehydrators. They dehydrate the body. Can you imagine inventing a drink that makes you thirsty? What a great idea. This is no wonder they're the number one money makers. Buy another bottle, drink it up. I'm still thirsty. Buy another bottle, drink it up. I'm still thirsty. Are you with me? These are a terrific way to make money. A drink that makes you thirsty. Now, if you're writing down, here's the next book. It's called The Body's Many Cries for Water. The author that wrote this book, what he said was that as we age, our eyes get dim. They don't work quite as good. Our hearing gets a little off. Not only that, but our thirst mechanism is not reliable. We can't just go by whether we're thirsty or not. What happens is we stop drinking. We know, oh, I don't feel thirsty, so I don't drink water. So he asked this question. He said, what would happen to a body if it got chronically dehydrated? In other words, I didn't drink water not just yesterday and the day before and the day before. I haven't drank water for the last 6 months much. Are you with me? I hardly drink any. I didn't barely drink. Maybe once a day. I don't like water, fact is. I don't drink much water. What would a dehydrated body look like? So he goes through all the body and he talks about the different parts of the body which are water rich. What are some of the areas of the body that have a lot of water in them? You know those little discs between your spinal cord? Those are mostly plump because of water. The lining of your stomach, it's made of a mucous membrane which is largely water. The lining of your lungs, because the way that you exchange carbon dioxide with oxygen in the lungs, the way you do that is by a watery film. The lining of the lungs is mostly water. The cartilage that lines your joints is mostly water. He goes through all of these different tissues and he says, if I get chronically dehydrated, what the body does is it steals water from these different areas, and before you know it, I start seeing problems there. Now, have you ever heard of arthritis? Anybody ever heard of that? You know, those sore joints, you know, we kind of blame, oh boy, I got one of those arthritic, I got one of those sore joints. So this is what on the end of the bones we have cartilage. And what the cartilage does is it helps those bones glide across each other, you know, so they just slip across each other nicely. Problem is that if we haven't been drinking enough, you know what makes cartilage plump? Any idea? Water. Water is what makes it plump, nice and thick, see? If I haven't been drinking enough water, what happens is the body starts to rob the water from that cartilage. And now the bones start touching each other, and when they touch each other, that's painful. And if it gets enough pain in it, I don't want to exercise anymore. If I exercise, I get pain. And so I lay off the exercise, and the longer I lay off the exercise, what happens to the muscles? They start to get weaker, and the muscles not only hold the joints together, but they hold them apart. So now the joint really starts to touch each other, and now I know when I walk, I really get pain, and I'm really convinced that I should quit walking. That's what I should do. I should quit walking. Now, if you've got that thinning of the cartilage, what's the supplement you should take? Anybody know? What's a supplement? It's pretty common. People talk about it. Somebody said it, glucosamine and chondroitin. Glucosamine sulfate and chondroitin. And I have guests that go to Costco or Walmart and they buy them in these great big tubs, you know, that you have to have a small vehicle to carry it with. and they get the glucosamine sulfate and chondroitin, and they sit down every morning with their morning coffee with two capsules of glucosamine sulfate and chondroitin, and they religiously take their glucosamine sulfate and chondroitin capsules with their morning coffee. See what's going on? One is making my body dehydrate, and what the glucosamine sulfate and chondroitin is trying to do is make me try to hang on to water to make so I can plump up that cartilage. What our body needs is water. If you go through this book, take a look at The Body's Many Cries for Water. He talks about high blood pressure. He talks about high cholesterol. He talks about ulcers. He talks about asthma. He talks about depression. He shows you how water plays a factor in each one of those problems, every one of them. So you can sit down and you can look at it. He has another book, another title for his book, You're Not Sick, You're Thirsty. One of the basic things our body needs is water. Now, my wife and I were in Las Vegas, and we went to a health talk down in Las Vegas. Most people don't go to Las Vegas for health talks. But we went to a health talk down there, and the lady who did that health talk was one of the number one researchers in the Adventist Health Study. And here's what they discovered. 60 to 70% less fatal heart attacks on people that are well hydrated. People that are drinking enough water to be well hydrated have between 60 and 70% less fatal heart attacks just from that one thing. She said, if I was to tell my heart patients to do more of any one thing, it would be to drink more water. Isn't that amazing? You know, we think of all the things, lower the cholesterol, take exercise, all this stuff. She said, if I was to tell my heart patients to do more of any one thing, it would be to drink more water. Now, at the guest house, we always have our lectures in the evening, and I tell the people to drink 6 to 8 glasses of water, and sure enough, there's somebody there that hasn't drank any water all day. They go upstairs right after class. They drink 6 glasses of water, and in the morning, they come after me with a gun. You know, they're running around. What did you do? You told me to drink all that water. I was up all night. If you're going to start drinking your water, you want to start early. And so I tell people what I'd like you to try and do. I call it the 10-day test. If you're not doing this already, I'd like you for the next 10 days to try this. Drink 2 glasses of water before breakfast every morning for the next 10 days. If you're not already doing that, give this a try. 2 glasses of water before breakfast every morning for the next 10 days. After 10 days, I can almost guarantee you if you do it faithfully, you'll never stop doing it for the rest of your life. It will change you that much. You'll feel that much different. Try 2 glasses of water before breakfast. Now, when I had somebody tell me this, and I tried this, oh, I felt awful, terrible. Oh, it was the most ridiculous. I couldn't believe it. I hated, when I first heard it, I hated drinking water. I did not like water. I came from Ottawa. And in our home in Ottawa, the water came right out of the Ottawa River, right into our tap. We knew it was not filtered because we even got minnows sometimes came right through the tap. So it was just straight out of the Ottawa River, right into our tap. I'm sure they have to have processing plants now, but then I hated water, never drank it. And they told me to drink 2 glasses of water before breakfast. Oh, it put a cramp in my stomach. I felt awful. Then somebody said, well, warm it up. If you drink 2 glasses of warm water before breakfast, you'll notice the difference. Try 2 glasses of warm water before breakfast. Oh, I wouldn't want to miss that. It doesn't matter where we go. My wife and I have to get our water before breakfast. I would rather miss shaving. I'd rather miss anything than miss that water once you get used to it. 2 glasses before breakfast, 2 glasses between breakfast and dinner or lunch, 2 glasses between lunch and supper. You've got your 6 glasses. You don't have to drink any before you go to bed. If you're troubled with getting up at night, try to get your last water before 4 o'clock. Try not to have to drink a lot of water in the evening, in other words. Try and get yourself well hydrated throughout the day so you have to get up less at night, okay? So that's your water lecture. Eileen, come on, we're going to do some demonstrations. This morning we want to talk to you about soups and salads. And one of the my favorite parts of the meal is the salad. How many of you like salads? Like salad? Fact is, if I go to a restaurant, I usually judge the restaurant by how good the salad is. So if they don't have a good salad, I don't want to go back because I like that part of it. The salad is where you get to have all of the flavor and all the texture and all of the different compositions. But there are so many salads in our cookbook. I'm just going to read off the different types of salads we have. Then Eileen is going to show you how to do the basic lemon dressing so that you can doctor up that salad. And then she's got a couple of salads she wants to talk to you about. So we have the Arizona salad, the cabbage salad, the Caesar salad, the crisp oriental salad, the cucumber fennel salad, the edamame salad, four bean salad, grape and broccoli salad, Greek salad, Mediterranean pasta salad, potato salad, southwest salad, souchoy salad, tabbouleh salad, Waldorfer salad, and watermelon feta salad. And the watermelon feta salad, they served it in our last session, and the people just loved it because the watermelon's starting to come in now. So Eileen is going to show you how to do the basic lemon dressing.
One of the things that I really like about salads is you just feel so fresh and alive when you're eating them. I don't know about you, but I really enjoy salads as well. Some people really like a lot of garlic in their salads, and I don't. I'm Irish. I like potatoes and you know that kind of stuff. Phil loves to have garlic, the Caesar salad and all that kind of stuff. So you pretty well have to decide what you enjoy the most and then go for it from that angle. One thing that Phil and I really suggest is using fresh lemons. You can use it by squeezing it this way, or you can, I've got the Bosch and I go, whoop, you know, with the little machine, oh, it's so much fun, whoop, you know, and there goes the lemon juice. And recently I learned that I buy some organic lemons and I freeze the whole thing. And I used to just use the, you know, for flavor, for all the rest of it, I usually use just the yellow on the lemon. Well, now I grate the whole lemon on the organic lemons. And I use them in all sorts of sauces and stuff. And they're really good. And it doesn't taste pithy or anything like that. And it just brings everything alive. When you use a fresh lemon, there's nothing that compares. Like, when you go and you smell it, you just want to, ah. It's so nice. It's so invigorating. So what I do is I cut my lemon and squeeze it. And, you know, because we use so much lemon juice at the guest house, sometimes we'll squeeze a whole lemon, you know, a quart of lemon juice and keep it in the fridge. And here comes my trusty blender that I just love. And I'll put a little bit of lemon. You'll see the recipe on the book. I'll put a little bit of lemon juice in the lemon in my blender. I'll put the olive oil. You can use the extra virgin oil or the plain, whatever you like. But Phil and I have recently discovered, you know, I always thought people were nuts, but except for me, of course. But if you get a really good, you know, extra virgin olive oil or some kind of, the difference in the taste is unbelievable. And this one, I mean, this little bottle is $23 or $17, this little bottle. So you wonder, oh boy. But Phil and I love to use it when we're dipping it into breads and sometimes a little bit on our in our salad dressing. And it just melts in your mouth, doesn't it? It's really, really yummy. So if you can afford it, buy this for yourself as a treat. But generally, I use just the plain olive oil. So I put my lemon juice in there. I put my olive oil in there, a few tablespoons. And then I put whatever seasonings. Usually when Phil and I make a salad dressing, because I told you I was Irish and I don't like lots of garlic, I use roasted garlic. And I'm sure all of you know how to make that, and maybe tomorrow or whatever we'll show you how to do that. And, oh, it's so yummy. You can even spread it right on your bread and you don't have that whoo, taste in your mouth. When we do that, we can either use that or you can use different products that you have on the market. There's Garlic Plus, There's roasted garlic and red pepper. My brother-in-law makes a fantastic vegetable and garlic medley. Oh, I love that one. And there's all sorts of things that you can use as a seasoning if you don't have the raw garlic. You stick that in, a little bit of salt, and it says you can also put in pepper if you want. I usually put in a dab of cayenne to bring out the flavor. What Phil says, and is so true, if you put too much, that's all you can taste. We want to get the delicate flavor of food, so you don't want to overpower it with any one thing. Now, when you blend that, it's going to be runny. And so if you pour it on your salad, it's just going to kind of wash all over, and you're going to have a plate with a big lip so it doesn't fall on the floor or anything like that. But there is a trick. Most people use lots of oil in their dressing. And the reason why is as you pour it slowly into your blender, your dressing will get thicker. The only trouble is you don't want to use as very much olive or any kind of oils if you can help it. You want to be careful where you use them, so use them where it counts. The trick that I use is buying a product called Instant Clear Gel. I really, really like this. It's made up of like potato oil, potato flour, and cornstarch, but it's cooked, so you don't have to cook this. So what you do is you've got this runny substance in your blender, and you know it's too runny for your salad dressing. So you get a little bit of this instant clear gel, and it just looks like cornstarch, just like this. Very inexpensive, just like that. And you put in a little bit in your blender, and you turn it on, and wait a second, and it'll thicken. Don't thicken it to the point where you like it. Thicken it a little less. The reason being is, as it sits, it gets thicker. I've had it so thick I could stand on it, you know, because I put too much in. And so what you want to do is just put a little bit in at a time until you just about like it, and then leave it alone, and it will get to the point where it's absolutely perfect. I don't like not having this in my kitchen because it is so handy, even on things like if you've made a fruit sauce for your breakfast and it's a little thin, use that. You don't have to cook your fruit again. It just works excellent. I really, 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 really like it. And so that's what I do to thicken any of my salad dressings when they don't get quite thick enough. I really suggest that you use fresh herbs if possible. Once I get it to the point where I like the consistency, I'll chop up some fresh dill. I may use cilantro. I may use even mint, parsley, whatever you want, and just put that in at the very end, whiz it up, and there you go. You've got the most excellent salad dressing, and the lemon brings it alive. You need some kind of sweetener. Usually I can use either honey, maple syrup. I might use fructose, whatever you so choose. I also use a product called organic cane sugar, and I really like that as well. And so those are some of the things that I use for my lemon and dill dressing, and I make it into a lemon dill dressing. Sometimes I'll make a bigger batch, and during the week I'll divide it up, and I'll put some dill into one, and another day I might put cilantro, or if I'm in a real hurry, I might just put garlic plus, or roasted garlic and pepper, or whatever I want. And then it's a different taste all the time. That lemon really brings it alive. One of my favorite dressing or salads is the grape and broccoli salad. Did you type that up? It's in the cookbook, but what it is it's a creamy dressing. And what you do is you blanch or just parboil your broccoli just for a second till it turns. You put it in boiling water till it turns bright green, take it out, throw it in ice water, chill it, and then drain it thoroughly. Then you add, and it's, I just love it. Then you add chopped up half grapes, apples, or jicama. Has everybody had a jicama? They're really yummy. They look like a sweet potato, but they're round, and they're about the same color as a sweet potato on the outside, and you peel it, chop it up, and it's crunchy. Not much flavor, but it's fun to put into your salads, white, pure white inside, and it's fun to have it. Sometimes in the winter or whatever, they come from, you know, the southern parts of the country, you might not be able to get it, so apple works excellent too. So you can put that kind of thing. Then you make up a salad dressing made up of mayonnaise, and it calls for soya sauce supreme. You mix these two, and a tiny little vinegar, a little bit of salt, a little bit of cayenne, and you've got the nice, and a little bit of sweetener, and you've got the nicest dressing. You add that to your broccoli and your apples and jicama and celery or whatever else you put in there. I just love it. Anytime I make a big bowl of it at the guest house, people really, really eat it well, and they really, really enjoy it. And it's one way to eat your broccoli. You can eat it raw, but I don't know about you, but anytime I eat raw, cabbagey type things like that, broccoli, that type of thing, it doesn't sit well in my stomach. So if I just stick it in that water till it turns bright green, it just, and it only takes about 10 seconds, it tastes so much better to me, and I can digest it so much easier. So that's one thing that I really, really do like. The one thing I wanted to kind of show you a bit is, and that is another favorite, I like kind of things that have a fruity taste to it, and this is the spinach, strawberry spinach salad. So what you do is you get your spinach all nicely washed and dried. You don't want it wet, and it's all cleaned and ready for you. Then in your salad dressing, you put in I use a raspberry vinaigrette. I put in a little bit of olive oil. I have a vegan Worcestershire sauce that I forgot at home. And then your seasonings. And you make that. And again, if it's too thin, I use my, wherever it went. Ah, here it is. My instant clear gel, just to make it a little thick. And just before once that's ready, I'll add a few either fresh or frozen strawberries to that and make that, and it makes it a nice red color. You don't want to blend it too much because it'll turn pink, and to me it doesn't look as nice when it's pink. So you just want to go ch-ch-ch-ch. That's why you want to put it at the end. And then it's kind of chunky a little bit, and it just gives it that brightness, and you put that in the fridge, and just before you serve it, you pour that over your spinach, and you add fresh sliced strawberries, either pine nuts, toasted pine nuts, or almonds, or sometimes if you've got macadamia nuts, those are nice too. And that's a yummy salad. And that's another thing I can never seem to make enough of. And I really, really enjoy it. In the wintertime, when I can't get really nice strawberries, I get dried cranberries. And I soak them in either cranberry juice or even water if you want. And then I sprinkle that on top with my nuts and that if I can't afford the strawberries or if they're yucky or whatever. And then I use it. And then in my dressing, instead of fresh strawberries, I'll use frozen strawberries. And to me, that's a really nice, nice flavor. Another thing you can do with your lemon dressing was before that, you can put in orange juice concentrate. with your dressing, and that's, I really enjoy that. And then I usually use a cilantro, fresh cilantro with that, and that gives you a sweet and sour. Now Phil, when he makes a dressing, he likes it. He loves the Greek dressings and you know, for Greek salads and that. And the key for him is the oregano. And again, if you can use the really nice olive oil, oh, it's yummy, yummy. One of the things that sometimes I add on my strawberry or on any salad is onion. And I can smell this even as I open it. Some onions, you don't want it to taste like onion, you know. Oh. If I eat raw onion, I just can taste it for the rest of the year. And so I don't usually, they're always on the side of the plate when I'm finished. But the one thing that we found in when we're cooking and baking salads, I'm not cooking, but making salads, is if our onion is strong, we cut it up ahead of time, add a little bit of olive oil and a little bit of sweetener, and let it sit for a day or so, or even a couple of hours, and that will sweeten the onion up. This one smells like it came from somewhere for a long time ago, but it always makes it look attractive and pretty as you make up your salad. I just wanted to talk to you about the mayonnaise I use. I use the Vegenaise. I really like this. I do have some recipes in my book that I make sometimes, but this is generally what I use. It's a vegan dressing. It tastes good, lasts quite a while in your fridge. The only downside is it's a little expensive. You have to keep it refrigerated, like even when you buy it, it has to be in the fridge at all times. And in the States, it's way cheaper. You can get the same, like this is about $7 here in Canada. In the States, right across the line, is you can get a quart of it for the same price. So it drives me nuts. But anyways, that's life in the fast lane. That's all you can do. So usually what I do is, hey, are you going down to the States? You get me a few jars of, you know, mayonnaise. And people bring it in. What are you, nuts? But anyways, we do use a lot of that, and I really like it. When I'm making my potato salad or my cabbage salad, I'll use this. I use a little bit of the honey mayonnaise, honey mustard with this, a little bit of fresh lemon juice. Oh, makes, or even when I'm making my dill, my potato salad, I'll use dill pickle juice in here as well. And it makes a really delightful salad dressing. So dressings can be really exciting. And I really recommend that you try to use, you know, incorporate different things so you just don't have a one only other salad, you know, one kind of salad every day and day out. One of the things that I really like, even if you haven't got a lot in your home, is you can have just a fresh veggie salad. And asparagus has been just at the peak in this last month. We have in Armstrong and nearby, you know, little towns, they grow fresh asparagus. And, oh, there's nothing like it. It doesn't taste, oh, it's just wonderful. And I used to have a few in my garden, but somehow something happened to them. And where are you? You know, and I can't find you anymore in there. But anyways, there it is. And what I usually do when I'm making a dressing, or I might sometimes just have lemon asparagus as a salad. And what I do is, again, I dip it in my boiling water for just till it turns bright green, take it out, chill it immediately, and then the important thing is to put it on paper towel. When I die, people are going to not, they're going to wrap me up in paper towel. I honestly should have, you know, got some kind of shares in the paper towel business, because I don't know what I'd do without paper towel. Any of my herbs, any of my lettuces and that, I wrap it in paper towel. It will last weeks compared to days. When I do my spinach, I put layers of spinach between paper towel. It will last days compared to what it usually, you know how you open up a spinach bag and ugh, slimy, like, and but if you put paper towel between a few, between your layers of spinach or herbs or whatever, I live an hour away from a good center. I can't afford to run across this, you know, run across the street and buy my fresh herbs every day. And so when I buy my herbs or whatever from, you know, the organic place or from a food market or wherever I get it, I, as soon as I get home, I wrap them up, I put my parsley or my dill or my cilantro, wrap it all up, put it in a plastic bag. It will last a couple of weeks in my fridge easily. Honest, you won't believe how much it helps you. But anyways, here we have this blanched, and we have this, and then I drain it, because you don't want the excess water going into your dressing, because it's going to dilute the flavor. When I make a dressing for this, I use fresh lemon and honey, a little bit of salt, and a little bit of cayenne. And I just keep tasting it until I like the flavor. If it's a little bit runny, again, I use my Instant Clear Gel. You can get this at any bulk food store in the baking powder, soda, not baking powder, but cornstarch area, whatever. And it's very, very cheap, and it lasts a long, long time. You only use probably about a teaspoon at the most for a salad dressing. So anyways, I lay this out on a nice flat platter, and then I maybe cut fresh peppers, colorful peppers, and I drizzle my lemon dressing on there and let it sit for a couple of hours, and oh, that is yummy. Another thing that I discovered this spring was a asparagus salad. And what you do is you get a layer of lettuce on a, you know, on a platter, and then you cut up your little asparagus into little like coins. You can make it thinner here if they're thicker, and you roast it in your oven, just oil it a little bit, roast it in your oven for about 10 minutes, just till it turns bright green, and then you cool it, you sprinkle that on your bed of lettuce. Then you put on, I don't know where it went to, but I put on little grape tomatoes on there, and maybe a few nuts on top of that, and then a balsamic vinegar dressing, and oh, that is yummy, 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 yummy as well. So you can see the sky is the limit to making salads, using the herbs that you like, using, you know, beautiful fresh lemons, beautiful, you know, vinaigrettes that you enjoy, using mayonnaises that you like and can appreciate, and you can have a meal in itself. There's nothing nicer than a nice bowl of soup, a nice salad, and a beautiful gourmet type of bread to eat along with it. And I mean, that to me is a lunch fit for anybody. So there you go, Phil. It's your turn now.
Thank you very much, Eileen. And I'm going to take some time now and talk to you about soup. And you can see here again, we have a list of soups that we have in our cookbook. Wait, how many of you like soup? Anybody like soup? Okay, here we go. Black bean soup, chicken noodle soup, corn chowder, cream of asparagus, cream of broccoli, cucumber soup, curried carrot soup, fresh pea soup, garden vegetable soup, Italian lentil soup, minestrone, onion soup, roasted red pepper soup, roasted tomato soup, Russian borscht, sun-dried tomato, and garbanzo soup. There's all kinds of soups. And we like to serve them to our guests. How many of you like French onion soup? Anybody here is a French onion? Put up your... Oh, okay. That was my favorite soup. Well, we had to do a... we did a program, a CHIP program with Dr. Deal in Kelowna. And one of the CHIP programs he ran in the Grand Hotel. And they asked us to come and follow them up and do a banquet in the Grand. So we had to go into the kitchen in the Grand to use their facilities and produce this banquet to produce for the CHIP program. It was such a large CHIP program. When we were in there, the fellow had this great big pot You could get inside, about seven of us could get into it. It looked like a swimming pool. It looked like a hot tub. And he had it was full of bones. You know, he was rolling these bones over. And I said, what are you making? And he said, I'm making soup stock. I says, what kind of soup? He said, French onion soup. There he's got all these beef bones he's got in there. He's making this stock. I went, oh, no, he just wrecked it for me. My favorite soup, French onion soup. Well, I have a French onion soup in the cookbook. In fact, it's one of my favorite ones to make. And so you can make French onion soup. You don't have to have beef bones rolling around in a hot tub to make French onion soup. You can make it yourself at home using some of the ingredients that we've come up with. But anyway, this morning what I want to talk to you about is the minestrone soup. How many of you like minestrone? You like minestrone? There's a soup that's full of flavor. And so here's how I start it. I'm going to start off the minestrone soup with my pot. And in my pot, I'm going to chop in there some onion. First thing I'm going to do is saute. In fact, is if you look at in our cookbook, we have, I think, a basic soup recipe. When you go to a restaurant like Earl's or something like that, and you want to order the soup, if you ask them, is this a vegetarian soup, what do they usually tell you? Anybody ever find out? It's got what kind of a base? They always use a chicken base to it, and it wrecks it for you. Sometimes there's more and more vegetarianism out there, so there are people that are actually making vegetarian soups. But a lot of them, they use a chicken base for their soup. So what I'm going to do now, I'm going to start off, for my basic soup, I chop my onions and I start sauteing them. What I want that onion to do is turn glassy. I want it to just start looking glassy. At first it looks dead, but once you've started sauteing it for a bit, the next thing you know, it starts to turn glassy. And I'm glad I've got my wife here because she knows how to do it. I do it. She knows how to do it. I just do it. All right. Then I'm going to add to that glassy onion, just as it starts to turn glassy, I'm going to put in there celery. I like to have celery in my minestrone soup. And when it starts to turn nice and bright green, it's ready. Then I'm going to add, I sometimes put carrot. She's got carrot in here. But for the minestrone, my carrot, I'd like to shred it. So I like to have it, so I put it right at the end of this process so that it doesn't take long for it to turn glassy at all when it's shredded. So I put that in there. Now I've got that ready. Separately from this, I've taken cabbage. You like cabbage in minestrone? I love cabbage in minestrone soup. I'm going to take some cabbage and I'm going to cut it fine, shred it fine, and I'm going to saute it in a separate pan, and I'm going to braise it. I'm actually going to take it so that it actually starts to turn brown. I want it to have a bit of color to it, and it's going to, when you braise it, you don't want a lot of oil in there when you're sauteing it. You basically want to turn it brown, kind of brown on the edges. So you've braised your cabbage. I add that now, then I put the water in, and I'm starting to get ready. Then I'm going to use a product which we call chicken-style seasoning. Ours is called chicken soup base. You can get all kinds of these chicken-style seasonings. We choose the Nutramax. You can ask your health food store or the place where you shop if they have this. If they don't have it, they have access to it. All of the health food stores have this in their catalog. Nobody's asked them for it yet. You can ask them. The reason why we like this Nutramax is because it has a good flavor. It doesn't have MSG in it. It doesn't have fillers in it. And it has no wheat base product in it. A lot of our guests that come to us, they have celiac or they have wheat allergies or things like that, and so we have to try and find products that don't have any wheat in them, because if they have any wheat in them, that's going to affect them. And so this is one of the products that doesn't have it. And so I add my chicken, I have added my water, add my chicken flavoring now until I get it to the right flavor. I've got this all now sitting on the stove. It's boiling, or it's simmering. That would be a better way to put it, simmering. What else do you want to have in your minestrone? What's that? Garlic. Thank you. I missed that in this process. At the very end of sauteing my onion and my celery and my carrot, I add the garlic. I do it at the end, and there's a reason for that. If you start sauteing garlic at all, it's going to start burning. It's going to start changing its flavor. So I want to put it in at the end. So I'm going to put in a sauteed garlic. Then I want to have tomato juice, and I want to have beans. Because I'm fortunate at the guest house, we usually are serving a large pot of soup, and so I'm going to put in the red kidney bean, and I'm also going to put in the white one. I can afford to put in both of them for ours because I can open two cans and I still can use it up. So I'm going to put in both. I like to have them both. I just like both beans in there. After I've got this all simmering now, I'm going to take some of that out, a couple of cups, maybe 3 cups out in my case because I'm using it, making a big pot. I'm going to take it, beans, cabbage, onions, everything, all throw it in my blender and blend it. Then I'm going to pour it back in my soup. I like minestrone not to be watery. I like it to have a little bit of richness. And what that does, if you take the beans and the tomatoes and the stock and everything like that, and you blend up a few cups of it, then you pour it back into your soup. It's got the same flavor, but it's also made the whole soup so it's not just watery. Are you with me? So it's got to have that. And then there's the last thing I'm going to add to my minestrone is I'm going to add in some oregano. And I can tell you, if you haven't put the oregano in yet, once you add the oregano, you're going to just see the flavor is just going to come right out. Oregano, plus we use a thing that in most of our soups that Eileen has talked to you about a number of times, it's called Chef John's seasoning. If you don't have Chef John's and you don't have access to it, we sell it at the store, at the guest house if you're in our area. But if you don't have it, you don't have access to this. Have you ever seen a product called Mrs. Dash? Yeah, okay, this is very similar. You could use Mrs. Dash. And what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to bring a bouquet of flavors into my soup so that it's got this round, well-rounded flavor. It's got this minestrone flavor. The oregano certainly brings that out. But you want some background flavor with it as well, and that's what the Chef John's or the Mrs. Dash will do. Last but not least, I'm going to add a little dash of cayenne. Just a little bit. Now, the reason why I put cayenne in it is not because I want you to taste it. If you taste the cayenne, it's too much. All I want to use the cayenne for is to activate your taste buds. The cayenne will actually just increase the circulation on your taste buds, just a touch of it. All I can say to you is that in the kitchen, the one cardinal rule that Eileen uses in the kitchen with all of us that are working with her, because she's in charge, you can add, but you can't take away. Have you ever dumped some seasoning into your soup or into what you're making and gone, oops? When it comes to cayenne, you've got to really be careful because you can go, oops, and what you've got is just one hot cayenne-flavored dish. That's it, nothing else. Can't taste another thing, just cayenne. I don't want that to happen. So just add it sparingly, just a pinch at a time, and what you end up with is a flavor that is going, it's a background flavor, and what it does is it brings out the flavor in the soup. So this is our minestrone. That's basically it. Sorry. There was my wife whispering in the background. I've already made up, pre-cooked the noodles. I've got them over to the side. And just before I serve it, I put the noodles in. I don't want them to swell up, and I don't want them to fill up the pot, and I don't want them to be the starch to leach out of them and become a part of the soup. So just before I serve it, I'm going to put the noodles in, the pasta, whatever pasta you're going to use. I'm going to put it at the very end and then serve the soup. I just want them hot, but I don't want them to become part of that soup and start, like I say, leaching the starch out or get them all swole up or get them soggy or whatever's like that. So that's right at the very end. That's our minestrone soup. There are so many soups that you can make. Usually, most of our soups, we start out with the same base. We're using sautéed onions, celery, and carrot. And then we use, as the background flavor, we're using the chicken soup base as a background flavor. And that's usually how we make our soups. Okay? Any more?
No, just the last thing. The last thing I wanted to say is when you're making a soup, you want it to look nice. Lots of people say, oh, I have refrigerator soup. Have you ever heard of that? Have you ever done it yourself? You throw everything that's left over into a pot and there's your soup, right? Most of the time, sometimes it turns out wonderful, but most of the time you've got so much in there, all it tastes is like stuff in a pot. And so what you're looking for is a few things that's going to taste nice and that's going to be simple, but you have that flavor, that delicate, original, separate flavor that you're striving for. And the last thing I want to say, because I don't want to day too long, is when you're making a soup, you can use all the stalks, you know, like the broccoli, you can cut them up and cook them and blend them. But at the very end, you want what Phil will talk about over and over again is a twinkle, something that makes it look very attractive. So for example, if you're making a cream of broccoli soup, for example, you will save some of the flowerettes, and you will just, before you make the soup, you will blanch these or just parboil them for 1 second, cool them, and just before you're going to serve that soup, you put it in, and so it looks bright green, so it doesn't look gray. When you serve it, it will look really attractive. Or, for example, if you're going to have a vegetable soup, you can do that the same with peas. Put that in at the very last second so they're bright green and they're not brown. Or if you're making cauliflower soup, you can do the same thing. Or a red pepper soup, you can put the little red peppers at the very end. Or even chopped up parsley if you have nothing else, and sprinkle that on. Remember, your eyes do a lot for your digestion. If it looks terrible, you can close them and eat them. But remember what I said, we want to endure, and we want to enjoy. And that's my whole premise, is we want to enjoy what God has given to us, all the beautiful, varied vegetables and fruits and things like that. So anyways, thank you for listening, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Tomorrow we're going to talk to you about breathing and the importance of deep breathing. And at the same time, Eileen is going to share with you entrees and how to make different entrees. Okay, so let's just bow our heads and have a word of prayer. Father in heaven, as we bow before you here this morning, we've talked about how you've created our bodies, how you've made them so that they can eliminate poisons, how you've given us this gift of being able to get rid of poisons through our skin, through our bowels, through our kidneys, through our lungs. Thank you, Lord, for being in a country where we have so much fresh water, all kinds of water that's just easy for every one of us to get. Just ask that you'll be with each one of us as we think about these things, that we will remember to drink our water, Lord. Just remind us that to become well hydrated, to make a practice of taking care of our health. Thank you for the things you've taught us for cooking and how to cook in ways that we can bring out flavors and foods, and we ask that you will bless each one of our guests, each one of our people that are here this morning, as they seek to make food for their families that's delicious and tasty and fun. We just ask that you will bless our homes in Jesus' worthy name. Amen.